This is Sid Homan, and I'm reading a story, a true story from my college days called Well Done, My Lads, Well Done. The subtitle would be My Disastrous Life in ROTC. Morale in Princeton's ROTC was at an all-time low in the 1950s. 15 weeks now of 5 a.m. classes and nothing but Air Force training films. We were given lectures on how to lead men, but there was no one to lead. In point of fact, it was we who were led, the program's single officer being a Major Hawkins, an oddly shaped man with a bald head across which two strands of long black hair were crossed, bushy eyebrows rivaling those of the coal miner's John Lewis, and protruding above eyes sunk in the forehead like tunnels leading to the anthracite cache of his little black pupils. A little man, a waif. Curiously, he had around his middle a huge tire of fat, distorting his regulation blue Air Force shirt and cascading over a black belt whose buckle, against service rules, was a silver Longhorn steer with Texas branded across its nostrils. Below the belt, he boasted a tight bottom, a firm peach-shaped affair some teenage girls would have been glad to call her own, and thin legs, slightly bowed, that although missing hooves, could have been those of a diminutive satyr. This was the leader who paraded before us Princeton boys, dressed alike in the cadet's blue uniform, the sole reason, I suspect, why my mother, with visions of my returning in triumph to our Philly neighborhood, insisted I enroll in AFROTC. Each morning, at 1 minute to five, we reported to class. One did not go to class, but rather reported. At precisely five, Major Hawkins marched in, and clicking our heels to his attention, we saluted sharply. His at-ease was the signal to sit, not casually, but stiffly. A snap of the fingers, and one of the cadets, whose father was an executive with Boeing and had won the coveted position of squadron projectionist, turned on the morning's fill. Less than 30 minutes ago, our pupils had been mere dots, the brain casting images of Vassar girls with bare bosoms on the back of the retina, and then processing it, imagining the upside-down image had come from the outside world. Now, as the Air Force insignia flickered on the screen, those pupils were stretched to the breaking point as we watched films like Planes, Men, and That Wild Blue Yonder, or Pressing and Folding the Regulation Uniform, or our favorite, Don't Get Cocky in the Cockpit, 10 Steps to a Successful Takeoff. The film over, we were given an instant quiz, 50 true and false questions phrased so clumsily that they invariably gave the clues to the right answers. Now, though it would be highly unusual, for example, here's one of them, the plane's fuselage is sometimes located in front of the cockpit, true or false, or, quote, the successful commander has mastered the basics of command, true or false. It was my answer to a question on an anti-communist propaganda film that put me in Haskins' doghouse. In the spirit of McCarthy, in the witch hunting of the 1950s, the Air Force had ordered all ROTC units to show, we will bury you, the Red Menace. Normally silent during the film, this morning Haskins provided his own voiceover to images of Lenin or Stalin with, he's a bastard, boys, a real bastard, or catch the sneer in that commie's face. Russian troops parading down Red Square were met with, they're tough, boys, they're tough, but don't worry, we're tougher. When the lights went back on, the Major was, as they say, visibly moved. He thrust the quiz form into our hands, expecting that no cadet would produce less than a perfect score on Haskins' 50s, as we call them. This day, however, one of those 50 questions puzzled me. Quote, all filthy communists are bad, true or false, unquote. It was the filthy that was the giveaway. But I speculated, did it refer to all communists, including the ones who were not filthy? Or were all communists filthy by nature? Could one be a communist and not be filthy? And given this possibility, could there be a non-filthy communist who, something of a black sheep, was still bad? At 11, I would go to Philosophy 101 with a brilliant Professor Spucher, and I could just imagine his asking, "What, boys, do we mean by bad? And could bad be relative to the perceiver?" In good conscience, beckoned by true, yet seduced by false, trying to preserve what little sense of integrity I had in a squadron where Air Force blue uniformity was the rule, I circled false. The next day, after the opening salute, Major Haskins summoned me to the front of the class. "Holman!" "Yes, sir," I said sharply. "You know what you did?" "Begging your pardon, sir, I don't know what I did." "What?" Taking that what is a command for clarification rather than censure, I replied, "Sir, I cannot know what I did if, to the best of my knowledge, I do not believe I have done anything." "You've been hanging around with that mother's boy Spucher, that philosophy guy, haven't you?" Silence. Then, with great deliberation, struggling but at length failing to hide his contempt, he screamed, "You know what you did. You circled false for question number 36.
"Question 36, sir?"
"All filthy communists are bad, and you circled false."
"Yes, sir."
"Are you aware that the official Air Force answer is true?"
No, I'm not, sir."
Do you actually think that there could be a good communist?" Not waiting for a reply, he signaled to the other 25 cadets, who on cue laughed derisively. "I'm not sure what to think, sir. You see, sir, not knowing all communists, and so not knowing if all communists are filthy, I thought..."
"You thought?
You don't think. The Air Force does the thinking for you, Homan. Dismissed." From that moment on, I was the forgotten cadet. My blemishes, as we call them, were no longer just instances of not being in the spirit, another phrase used to indict any action threatening group solidarity. Now for Haskins, for the other 25 boys with visions of piloting an F-86 through the wild blue yonder, their co-pilot, that faster girl with the heaving breasts, I was christened Blemish. I could do nothing, nothing right. Near the end of the semester, I was unexpectedly summoned to Haskins' quarters at 5 a.m. on a Sunday morning. An unusual request, for none of us had ever seen him anywhere but in the classroom or on the parade field. "Come in," he called out in his high-pitched voice. Haskins sat in a hideously overstuffed chair in the far corner of the room, dwarfed by a museum of artifacts. Models of planes covered tabletops and cabinets. Fighter jets hung from the ceiling. The walls provided a pictorial history of Air Force uniforms. Mugs on the fireplace mantle announced, "The Flyboys of the 25th Squadron," and "Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, we were there." Blue was the operative color, for the drapes, the tablecloth, even the comforter covering a small bed in the far corner of the room. "Sit down, Homan, at ease." When I sat down in class, as I did in class, he laughed at my stiff posture. "I really mean at ease, Homan."
"Yes, sir."
"Tom will do fine."
"Yes, sir. I mean, Tom."
"Drink?" With that, he rose, walked to the bar just behind the chair, and without waiting for a reply, poured two large glasses of bourbon, no ice. "Cheers! Cheers!" Before I could figure out what was happening, he launched into a complaint about the dwindling status of all three ROTC programs at the university. Indeed, a faculty committee, urged on by student activists, had recommended to the university's president that ROTC be discontinued, that private schools such as Princeton should no longer be in what was called the arms business. "But with all this talk about doing away with the ROTC, you know, Homan, I might not be here next year."
"Sid, if you wish, sir."
"Sir, I mean Tom."
No, I didn't know that."
"Sid, right." Waving a hand towards some imaginary pinko dean or radical student spying from the other side of the room, he went on, "You think I'm some sort of dodo bird, don't you? They want me to accommodate those commies." His voice was slurred, and I now realized he had been drinking long before I arrived. I decided not to challenge his anti-communist posturing, but instead nodded in agreement at his railing against unpatriotic Americans who were selling us down the river, and at his
strangely eloquent praise of pilots in their planes who would be, as he would say, our last line of defense against the Red Menace. Somehow, I felt content to feed with nods of the head and sympathetic sighs the passion, the wonderfully absurd passion of this little man with the bulging belly, his eyes now glassy with patriotism and drink. Then suddenly straightening up as if reporting for duty, almost sobered by the process, he leaned forward in the chair, clinked glasses, and said, the reason I called you here today, Sid, was your final paper in the course. Oh, my God. My final paper? Approaching the end of my commission? Having given up on a teacher who long ago gave up on me? I had dashed out that paper in a half hour. Its title? A History of the Air Force in the 1930s. Half of whose sources I had invented, its stream of consciousness prose never seeing a revision, let alone a check for spelling or grammar. I deliberately parodied the genre of the historical essay. My final paper, is something wrong, Tom? I mean, sir? Wrong? Do you think there's something wrong? I'm not sure, sir. I admit that before I could confess to being indifferent about the assignment he cut me off with. No. Nothing wrong. Far from it. It's that final paragraph I want to talk about. Oh, the final paragraph. Figuring that Haskins had little time for fiction, nor had ever taken a course in creative writing, I had indulged myself in that final paragraph with a metaphor mocking both the Air Force and the very concept of metaphor itself. Holding the paper in his hand, he read aloud. As we say good flight to the study of the Air Force in the 1930s, we can see the ghost of those gallant aviators, those men in blue as the sky above, soaring on their angel wings of their machines, patriots clutching the controls as below them, grateful husbands and wives wave in awe and thanksgiving at those patriots cutting through the clouds like silver knives, these sons of the Wright brothers, these brothers of Lucky Lindy, Americans all, with one eye on our beloved country stretched beneath them in all its verdant majesty, the other eye on the blue heavens above where God's eye winks. That's the spirit. Well done, my lads. Well done. When he finished, tears, generous tears, rolled from his eye, down his cheek, staining the crisp blue color of his regulation uniform. It's the most stirring thing I've ever read. Stirring. The angel wings of their machines. These brothers of Lindy. Stirring, Sid. Stirring. I stood there, dumbfounded, at once ashamed and grateful. He held out his hand. Thanks, cadet. Thanks. After a heartfelt shake, he barked out a dismissed. But as I turned to leave, he stopped me. Any suggestions you have, Homan, for building morale among the boys? I hesitated and then came out with, I think, sir, it might be a good idea to let us have some actual experience with a real plane. You know, something we could fly. Dismissed!